Hey, so welcome to our Pyramid Conference call this morning. We have had some emails and questions regarding second semester, and I wanted to make sure that we were able to answer some questions today. We're also going to have a call tonight at 8 o'clock, so both sessions are going to be recorded so that we can have those for you to re-listen to if you need to. So what I want to do first is cover a question that I got over email first, and then I'll have each of you go with your question about everything that we need to have a discussion about. So the first question that I have is how to create experiments following the IntelliGrow method in class. And do we need to be doing that? Do we need to have a problem for them to solve, or are we just doing a fun demo? Well, I like to always approach the experiments in class with questions that will bring light to the IntelliGrow method. So when we're doing an experiment, whether it's a problem experiment, a problem we're trying to solve, or whether it's an experiment with a pattern that we're looking at, I always bring up IntelliGrow method in the form of questions. What patterns are we seeing? Why do we care about it? What makes that pattern contribute to what we're looking at? What are we really looking for? Is what's causing that pattern, that particular pattern, and why are you interested in it? What's so cool about that? And then giving them some time to play with it for a while. Whatever it is that the experiment is, backing off and let them try and do their own thing with it. And sometimes that's really, really hard for me to do because I want to show them why I brought the experiment. But I have to really back off and let them kind of play with it. And then I like to take some time actually away from that experiment and talk about what happened, do a kind of like a debrief in the middle of the experiment and give them the opportunity to write something down if they want to write something down in their books, or if they get an aha, you know, we talk about that aha, and then I give them a chance to write that down too. And then if there's time to do any brainstorming, depending on what the experiment is, we might do some brainstorming on the board to talk about it. And then I'll ask them, okay, what do we want to do next? What do we want to try next? Or maybe right in the middle of the experiment, we change things up and we try something different. And then we ask the questions, okay, so why did that happen? Why did we get this result? And then ask them, well, what do you want to do different? And why do you want to do it different? Let's try it. So I like to come with a bunch of questions to be asking. And then I try to make sure that I do my own experimentation with it at home so that I've practiced it to see what questions I can ask them. What questions will help get them moving and excited about it. Okay, what are your thoughts on it?
Can you give an example?
Yeah. So this last week, we were working with the theory of relativity and working on an experiment that showed gravity, kind of giving it a spatial background. So we had a sheet that was stretchy fabric. I hooked it onto some broom handles. I used safety pins so that it was attached to it and had the kids each holding part of the sheet. And then I had a weighted shaped ball in the center, which was actually pennies that were all duct taped together to give it some weight. And it was about the size of a tennis ball. I stuck that in the center of the sheet. And the experiment was to take some marbles and roll them around on the sheet to see what kind of patterns we would get and talk about how the planets rotate, how the gravity works, and why if you have two different centers of gravity, why that gives you a different pattern and what that looks like. Using different sized marbles, using multiple marbles at the same time, and then putting negative space in there by taking a yardstick underneath the sheet and propping it up to get a negative space effect different than what the center of gravity is, to see what kind of things would happen if we did that. And so I started with just the one thing first, had the one center of gravity, and then had them each have one marble to roll on there to see what kind of patterning they would get. I gave them a lot of time to play with that to see, you know, well, if I take it from this end, what's it going to do? If I go from a corner, well, what if we move the fabric of space? You know, what happens then? You know, and then we have it jumping off the sheet. So we played with that for a little while first. And during that time, I would ask them, okay, why do you think that did that? And why is that cool? Why do you care about what this is doing? And as we started talking about gravity, one of the kids brought up, oh, well, don't we use the moon to slingshot around when we send astronauts up? We talked about that. And they had questions from that. And so there were questions I couldn't answer because I didn't know, which was fine, but they were really good questions, and they could write them down in their books. And then I added two marbles and went through and experimented with more than one marble, and then they did a handful of marbles to see, and they would hit each other, and they tried to get a figure eight going between two centers of gravity, and then we added that negative gravity in there to see what it would do. And they had a lot of fun with it. They really enjoyed it, and they talked about it. And then after we were through, we put it down and we debriefed about it. We talked about why the patterns were doing what they were doing, and can you move space? Can you shake space up and cause problems in space for those things moving through gravity? And so they had some really good questions. And that's how I like to run my experiments. That's how I try to bring IntelliGrow Method in. We talk about those things. Does that make sense?
Yes. Misty?
Yeah.
Where do you get all of these fabulous ideas for those of us that are not really into the science? I mean, I'm into science. I do a science Olympiad team, but what you just described blows my mind that you could even come up with that. Where did you get it?
I had a student in class last semester. She said, hey, we were playing with this. What do you think? And I went, oh, that's really cool. I don't know anything about it. So I started looking things up on the internet about it, and I found an experiment that was done with exactly what she was talking about. So I do research. If I have an experiment coming up within the next 2 weeks, I'm looking things up for what I want to do, what's going to interest them, what do they care about, what's a reason for them to care about this kind of thing. So I take my time to really think about the kids in class and what will spark their interest. I had one year where I had a kid that was a BMX rider, and so we did several experiments to do with building a bike jump. We also did experiments talking about the kind of dirt that's needed to, and the, how to compact it down the right way to make a solid jump. So I'm really, really interested in my kids and what they're interested in.
So if you had like a large group, say you have 13 to 14 youths, would you do the experiment all together or would you split up into two groups? What would you do?
I think it would depend on what the experiment is. We've done Newton's three laws where I had three tables set up and I went and did a demo for each of them to see what they were to do at each table. And then I just said, go for it. Go to the table you want to go to. And then so we had three different groups going. But I have a co-mentor and I have a student mentor. So it's going to depend on your help that you have in class and what that experiment is.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to open this up to discussion. Any questions you have, we're going to talk about them right now. We don't have to stick to experiments. We can go to line of logic. We can go to book colloquiums. What are your needs?
Line of logic. I need to be reminded exactly. How, I mean, I know what one is, but I don't know what one is.
Okay. What? Tell me some books you've read. What are some books in class?
Well, I just started listening to Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance because that's going to be our first book. And within like the first 5 minutes, I was, ooh, there's stuff there. But I don't know what to do with it.
Okay. All right. So, sadly, that's not one of my books. What did you read first semester? I want to go back to some easier books.
Carry On, Mr. Bowditch.
Okay. What was... Okay, we can use Nathaniel. Good one. All right. When he was dealing with all of the deaths in his family, his friends, what was his pattern that he would use to get through those times? Do you remember?
I don't remember. He left each time. I don't know if that was the first thing he did, though, but he headed out to go to see.
Okay.
I think. It's been a while.
Okay. So what I remember is he would work. He would find something that he needed to work on and do. And so he wouldn't spend a lot of time moping around about it. He would have to study something, do something, work something. His line of logic and thinking was to move through that, through his work, and then to come to a completion of something. Um, one of the guys on the ship that wanted him to teach, and I can't remember his name, wanted him to teach him how to learn to do a lunar, and was really struggling with his personal self-esteem. You know, he always put himself down. His thought process on who he was that he wasn't good enough because of where he was at in his rank on the ship. And what was Nathaniel's line of logic with that? When you think about that, Nathaniel's line of logic was different than this man that he was trying to teach. And he laid out for him a line of logic to follow. Does anybody remember?
Are you meaning that, you know, the man's line of logic was, I'm so low on the totem pole that I can't do this because I'm just not capable because of my position. You know, so the line of logic is if anyone in this position can't do this. And Nathaniel's line of logic was anyone can do this. You just have a self-esteem problem, and I will help you one-on-one until we get there.
Right. And he had a specific rule for him, though, in that line of logic. He laid it out for him.
I don't remember the details well enough. Maybe we should take Lord of the Rings or something. I know that.
That's okay. I'll lay it out. So his thing was, he said, I will teach you that you cannot be putting yourself down if I'm going to teach you, because you won't learn if I teach you something and you decide that you can't learn it. So there was that too. So yes, everything you said, that was right. Those were lines of logic. How would you write that out? If you were to write it on the board for, say, the guy that was being taught, how would you write his personal line of logic about himself? What would A be?
If I am to learn.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Then I cannot put myself down.
Okay. And if those things are done, what is the, what's C? You have A and B, and then what would C be?
Then I can learn?
Yes.
Okay, so A was what again? I didn't follow that very well.
Okay, so A was if I want to learn, B, don't put myself down, and then C, I can learn.
So, Misty, would it be striving to learn plus positivity equals ability to learn? Because we do all of our explanations in equation form usually.
Yeah, you can take any line of logic and you make an equation out of it. You can take any if this, then that statement and form a line of logic from it.
Okay, perfect.
What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Thank you.
Okay. Does that help everybody really simplify it and bring it down so that you can see and go, okay, I can definitely walk through and teach this?
Yes. And do you do this with all your document studies?
I try to find at least one thing in there that I can do that with in each document study, yeah.
And colloquiums?
I don't always get to do it in the colloquiums. It just depends on the kids and where they're at with the discussion. I like to pull out the patterns. I like to pull out the equations. This semester, there will be more of it. We didn't do it as much first semester. The second semester, I try really hard to bring those things out. One of my favorite books to use to do a line of logic is C.S. Lewis's The Magician's Nephew. You can really see Jadis, the White Witch, in there. You can see her line of logic. And there's a part where the main character, Diggory, calls her on her line of logic, because he catches it towards the end of the book where she's trying to trick him with it. And it's really, really awesome because he catches it and he's like, oh, bam, I know what you're thinking, I know what you're going to do, and I'm not going to follow it. And he stands his ground because he caught her line of logic.
I'll have to go revisit that book again.
It's towards the end.
Okay.
And then you can even find, depending on what core book is being used, if there are parts in my core book that I can make comparisons to the line of logic that Jadis was following and what Diggory decided to do about it.
Mm.
So that's a really good book, if that's what you want to focus on.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions on line of logic that you guys can think of?
I'm good. I have one question. I've got a class. I have 5 boys in my class. It is way fun to have all boys or all girls in the class. I didn't realize that until this year. I can do things with these boys that I couldn't have done with the girls. But pulling deeper thought out of these boys is like pulling teeth. And so I'm looking at this semester with a lot of trepidation because I think it'll be a lot of fun, but getting them to go deeper, to see what they're, you know, I've been able to get them to go deeper on things like, you know, like the Star Wars movie that just came out. I bet I could have gotten them all over that one, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting to them. How do I get these boys to, and they're all at least 15, 16 years old. How do I get them to go beyond the surface? You know, when I go to church, you know, we have something called the Sunday School Answers. When someone, you know, whenever the teacher asks a question, the right answers are always pray, read your scriptures, go to church kind of thing. That's what these guys do. When I ask a question that is open-ended, I get Sunday school answers. I get the very basic, you know, without the thought behind it of the why. And when I ask the why, they just look at me.
Let them look at you for a while. Keep asking why.
Okay.
And then keep asking that question, why should you care about it? Why do you care about it? Why would you want to care about it? Why does it matter? Your why questions are the most important questions there. The other thing is I'm, excuse me, I'm sure you're getting to know them really well. And bringing in things that you're learning about them that they like will be really, really important to getting them to go deep.
Okay.
Really focus on them. You have a small enough class, you can do that. Sometimes it's harder with the bigger classes to do that. But with five, you can do that. Simulations will be really important. Be very, very particular on your simulations to focus on their needs and getting them to go deep.
Okay.
Because that will help. And then lots of prayer for you. Pray about it.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting. Actually, I'm only going to have four because one of them is joining the military. He's enlisting the second semester. And so I'm going to be with four. And the four, I've got one who is Q22 and autistic. I have one who's probably an undiagnosed Asperger's. And then one who hates to write. And then the other one who is just, you know, they're all good. I have the best class in our Commonwealth for behavior and everything. And they love the class. They love learning and doing. And, you know, but that's who they are. I have the fourth one is probably just the perfect ideal student, but even he won't go deep. So
that's okay.
It's been an interesting adventure.
That's okay. You'd be surprised at what you're planting seeds for later. It's okay. If you're feeling like, this is just not working, think again, because they're going to be thinking about stuff later and make connections later, and you might not ever, ever hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. You just do your best, follow your promptings, and individually pray about each kid. And even when we have the bigger classes, that's what we're doing. We're praying individually for each scholar, asking, you know, and letting the Lord know, this is what I'm struggling with. This is what I care about. How do I help? You'll be surprised at the promptings you'll get even in the middle of class.
Okay. Here's hoping. I know it'll work out. It always does. But, yeah, I'm just looking at this semester and just going, oh, boy.
Yeah. Yep, I have one boy and all girls. We have 9 kids, and the last two books we're supposed to read is Alice in Wonderland and The Wizard of Oz, and so it's going to be really interesting. Those were my prompted books this year, so... Yeah, it'll be fun. And my boy in that class is the quietest. We'll see what I can get out of him.
Yeah.
He's a great kid. So I rely on what I know about them, too. It's so important to get to know them and what they care about. Call their parents. Say, hey, tell me some things. Give me some ideas. Communicate with the parents. It'll help you a lot.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, any questions on simulations?
Yes.
Okay, what's your question?
I don't know. I don't know what to do. I guess I don't know what I don't know.
OK. Okay, so
I just don't know how I'm supposed to, I don't know what to think of to do, and then I don't know, like, why, I guess I need to decide why.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how to decide the why, I guess.
Okay. Well, first I have to, let me think about it. You have to look at the book you're reading, because the simulations go kind of along line with the book. You don't have to use the book. It can be completely different from the book depending on what you're prompted to do. You do have to first decide your why. Why do you want to do a simulation? Let's say, for example, you want them to go deeper. What book do you want to use for your example?
We're reading The Beginner's Guide to Constructing the Universe.
Oh, okay. Well, that one's fun. There is a ton of stuff in that book.
Okay.
So
I guess I didn't realize, it just never came to my mind that I could use the book that we're doing for that month as the theme for, like, I could do experiments off of it and simulations. I didn't realize that.
You could go abstract with the book, too, and say, okay, build your universe. What's going to be in your universe? Or you could give them things and say, okay, this is what your universe is made of. What results do you get? There's a ton of stuff you could do with that. You could put them in life and death situations and give them things from the book that they would have to build to save each other with. You could give them a situation where they were at war and different things from the book that they could maybe need to build to help the communities out. There's a ton of things you could do from that. Just depends on your why and what their needs are.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How is your mentoring going? Do you have mentoring questions? Things going on in class that you're struggling with? Things that you need recommendations on that way?
This is going pretty well. With the prison, so we have 13, three girls, and then the rest are boys. And all of them got their prison but one boy.
Okay.
And so everybody's pretty much engaged, but this one's not.
Okay. Tell me about him. What does he like?
He likes hunting. Like, if you ask him, he says he doesn't know. He doesn't have any interest, but I know he hunts, and I know he does, like, yard care and stuff as a job, and does, like, gardening.
Okay.
Stuff like that. But, like, the books, he'll maybe read a chapter, and I don't know if it's even if he's, I don't know if he's choosing to or if he's doing it because his mom tells him to do it.
Okay. Did he do a science project?
Yes, he did.
What was his project?
It was on different lines of fishing line. Like the...
Very cool.
But, you know, like, I think... And this is part of the problem. It was his turn to, present, our time had run up, and we had to, I know, it was horrible, of all people, but, so it was, like, a super quick, obviously, so, I don't know, but he did one, yeah. So we were going to do it different this time, so that we have unlimited time.
Uh-huh.
To present, and I told them that in class, that neither one of us know how to get him engaged. Like, if we ask him a question, it's not like he's, he's very polite, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't want to really work on his education or anything. Which we're not forcing to him at all. I mean, we didn't give any pressure. It was definitely an invite, but just wondering how we could really reach him.
Okay, so what books are you reading?
We're reading The Beginner's Guide, and then The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Flatland, and then a book about Marie Curie.
Okay. So I would do a simulation that has to do with survival skills, because if he's an outdoors guy, I would do something that focused on something around him on that to really engage him, his thought process. You know, what would I do? How would I do it if I've got... I'm stacked outside and I've got these things to survive with. What am I going to use? How am I going to use it? I've got this much time that I've got to have available for using it. What would I eat? I would just try really hard to come up with a simulation that would be really engaging for him.
Okay. That sounds really good.
And then I would make some contact with his parents and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about some things that I want to do just for him, just about him. Share with me some insights of some things that he really likes. Because I'm, as a mentor, I'm making the assumption that he likes outside. He has an outside job. He likes to hunt. He likes fishing. Those things sound like he likes outside. So I would do what I could to do some outside things, some things that would be of interest to him that way.
Okay. So it's totally fine then to, like, focus on one, like, make your thing, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how I'm trying to finish. Like, to build the simulation around one use. I mean, they're all going to do it, but with one use
uh-huh.
in mind.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Totally fine. If you have everybody who's engaging and you know you want to get him engaged, yeah, it's absolutely fine to build something around him because everybody will engage in what they love. And even if they don't love it, they'll engage in some form of it.
Thank you. That's really good.
Okay, so I have to tell you about a field trip that we went on at the end of the semester. We took our kids to go see the Ant-Man, and that not the movie, but a guy in southern Utah here that collects ants and ships them out all over the country to people who want ant farms. And we have one girl in our class who struggles to want to be there. She's there for her friends because she wants to be with her friends. And at least that's kind of what you see coming out. And we walked into this really tiny shed with 11 kids, and he pulled out a box from the freezer that had probably 10,000 ants in it. And when they're cold, they're very slow to move and very inactive. And so you can take a spoon and even stir them up. And if you blow on them, they get very excited, and they can feel that change in the chemistry, and it gets them very defensive, so they'll be moving and that. So we had a really interesting group of kids. Some of them were really excited about looking at these ants, and some of them were freaked out by it, and some of them were like, oh, that's cool, okay. And I was really watching to see what our one girl would do that wasn't actively wanting to do everything in the project. And she was very attentive and paying attention, and really, she found it really fascinating. So that was something that got her attention, and it was important for me to make a note of that and be, okay, all right. So I don't know if it was the idea that it was the bug yet or what, but when I mentor classes, I like to take each kid individually and ask them a few questions and have my one-on-one time with them. And so when I talk with her and it's her turn, I'll be asking her, so what did you think of this field trip? How did you feel about it? You know, I'm going to try to see where she's at with that and find out what was interesting to her. So I try to gauge time with each student and pay attention to what I want to be asking that specific scholar so that I can get to know them better. So I do try to pay attention to those little things and catch things in class that get their attention. I have another girl that's completely the opposite of her, that she will ask a million questions and she's excited about everything. And she has a hard time waiting for her turn. And she's always engaged. So it's easy for me to pick up where she's at with that. But she has a hard time making decisions on one specific thing that she wants to follow through with. And so I know with her, I have to kind of help her pin down what she wants to focus on, what she wants to do. So when it comes time for her science project, I know that's what I have to do, is talk with her about that. And so I have a notebook, and in that notebook I have it separated individually for each kid, and I'll write down my personal notes of, okay, this is what I need to do to ask this kid. This is what I noticed about this person this week. You know, and I don't write about every student every week. I'll write about what stands out to me in class. and I'll make notes on that so that I don't forget. So that's been something that helps me. Helps me figure out, you know, what does that one kid need that maybe I'm not doing or maybe that we can do that will help everybody too.
And how often do you do the mentor meetings?
Last semester, we got 2 meetings in. This semester, my co-mentors has to take a break from mentoring, and so I'll be lucky if I get one-on-one time with each of them. So I'm going to probably be making phone calls from home to have some time with them, which is not ideal because I like to do them in person. But I can only do what I can do with my time and the amount of kids we've got. So
2 per semester, like pretty good.
Really good. If you got
okay.
2 meetings with them individually per semester, that's great.
No, we had 1. But I'm saying 2 would be good.
So what we did, because I had a co-mentor, we split the class in half, and she met with 5 or 6, and I met with 5 or 6. And then we were able to meet them twice. So.
Yeah, I have a co-mentor too. And we did. We split it. But I didn't know, like, you know, when I went to go do it a second time, the first person I brought in, she's like, well, we just had one. Like, she was kind of like, are we doing it too often? So, anyway, that
just, smile, you don't know how to get thank
you. Okay, so it's fine to do too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I had the one elusive kid that was like, do we have to talk? So I would snag him in the hall and say, hey, how you doing? How's it going? I tried to make it less less formal for him the next time around.
Mm-hmm.
And that was helpful because he wasn't as stressed about, oh my goodness, I have to sit down and have this meeting and I don't know what to say.
And you just asked them questions we just asked questions and listened. Is there,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what are some of the questions you like to ask? I kind of did it somewhat like a debrief.
Yeah, it's like a debrief. And sometimes it has to be a little bit, depending on the kid, a little bit less intrusive.
Uh-huh.
And so I ask, okay, you know, what did you do this week? How did it go? What are some things that I can help you with? How are your goals coming along? How are things going at home? How's your study time? You know, we go through all of the goal questions. I try to cover a question from those things. I try to see, okay, you know, what I'm looking at their accountability reports and going, okay, they're keeping up on their goals or they're not keeping up on their goals. And so I gauge my questions on those things too. Well, how's your studies going? Do you study in your room? Do you study at the kitchen table? Do you feel like you got enough time to study? Do you have interruptions? How's your mom when you study? Are things going okay there, you know? Is she letting you study or do you have to take the trash out? You know, I think about what's going on with that specific student where they're not showing up and try to ask questions around that. To see what I can help them with.
Thank you. And you said these are recorded, right?
Yes, we're recording this. Yep.
And how do we access that after?
I will email it out, a link to it. I'll get the link from Rick and make sure that everybody gets an email with it.
Okay.
Okay, we have about 6 minutes and then I have to go. Anything specific that you would like to focus on?
This semester we're redoing the goal worksheet and the school tips again. And I remember, I'm not finding it as I'm scanning through real quick, but I remember there's a difference this semester of what's expected on for goals and
right.
Where before they got to decide everything themselves, I vaguely recall like we were now requiring a certain number of math lessons or something.
Yeah, so there's 4 math lessons required. There's 5 core book studies required. On the certification page in the mentor manual, it will have that listed out. And I like to actually make them a chart, their own chart, so they can check things off as they go. And I give them 4 weeks to work up to it and see how they do. So the first 4 weeks, they have leeway to gauge themselves and see where they're at. If I've got kids that were already doing 5 math lessons a week, they're where they need to be, and they know that they're not going to have to push themselves that hard. And so I also do an above and beyond requirement in case they want to push themselves to that level. And they may have one more a week that they want to do. Or they may just want to increase the amount of time that they're doing their lessons. But I give them the first 4 weeks to work their way up and make their mistakes and to do any makeups. And then once they hit the 5th week, they know that they're going to need to make up what they miss in order to get their certification.
Okay. Okay.
I know this semester is an apprentice scholar semester, so they don't really have a prize, but it seemed like there was a trip planned at the end of the semester. What kind of example? Can you give me some example of what you might do?
We were going to do a night where we had a guy from the university come and bring his telescope, and we were going to study the sky with him. And we ended up having a really bad weather and not able to do that. So we have an observatory in Cedar City, and I'm going to see if I can schedule some time to take them up to that. And if that falls through, then I'm going to definitely reschedule our I can't think of the name, you guys, the scientific name, our astronomer. There we go. Our astronomer visit. So we'll plan our field trip around that.
Okay.
And those are the people, only the people that got the certificate, right? Or how do you do it? We thought it was just those who earned it get to come.
Right. So that is, yeah, that is for our ones that have earned it, that have met the certification requirements. Actually, there is another field trip, though. There's the nature walk that is not part of class time. And that's for everybody. That's part of the certification requirement. So for that, I haven't planned it yet, and I'm still thinking about what we're going to do. We have Zions. We have Bryce Canyon Bias. We have Snow Canyon. Lots of different places. There's different places where they do bird field experiences where you can take them out for bird watching. But I want them to just go into an observation mode when we go on our nature walk. So we will probably pick one of the parks around here and hike out and a safe area where they can pick their spot and do some nature observing. We're not going to do that, though, till March. I did have one year where we went up to Zion and did a winter nature walk, and that was neat because not a lot of people go up there in the wintertime to see what it looks like. And so it was good to take that and contrast the differences.
So you do that outside of class?
Yep.
And how long are you usually going for?
Where we go. Depends on where we go and the travel time.
I guess so, yeah.
And how much money we've got in the budget. So.
Okay. How much time do you spend with just the, you know, picking your spot and observing?
Okay, we do 15 minutes of looking, and then we do 30 minutes of writing. So about 45 minutes. And then we have to plan for at least a 20 to 30 minute debrief afterwards.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Hey, it looks like our time's up. I'll be on again tonight at 8 o'clock. If there's something that you think of that you need answered, be sure and get on. And I hope this was helpful for the questions that you've had. And then if you have more and you can't get on tonight, then please email them to me. Make sure in the subject line you put question, and I'll be sure to get to those, okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you. You too. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.